It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy. Hello. Welcome, one and all. It is June 13th, 2022. That's right, that means...
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Well, that's right. It is Monday. There's a lot going on in the world and at and on radio. I'm looking for a blog post. Essentially, what's going on is SDF is excited about having an anniversary. It's going to be 35 years. SDF is 35 years old. On June the 15th is when it begins. And the email says, there will be a 35-hour marathon beginning June 15th at 1400 hours. If you're familiar, you know that it is 1900 UTC, or a little after that, about 1902 UTC right now. Almost. But anyway... it is happening. We're celebrating SDF's 35th birthday. It's also Icer's birthday. It's I-C-Z-E-R. I'm sure you may have seen the name around. The one and only. Happy birthday. Coming up on the 16th. So anyway, beginning June 15th at 1400 hours through June 16th, 2300 hours. So if you have a show during this time, hey, that's what news to me is, we'll have some special... I'll try to see if I can't find some special content. That's what I forgot to do yesterday. Anyway, I need to reach out to Snowdesk and get a time slot. All right, there are two main ways to participate. People will be participating: a live stream during a claim slot, or just a file via the podcaster. There is a list, and SDF put together a cool little collage that... anyway, I thought was pretty cool. If you want to check it out, go to TX0, that's TangoXray0.org, and then from there, TX0.org. I always have my, I talked to SM, or chatted with SMJ, and it's basically comes down to the problem that, my network provider, my Google Fiber guy, my connection has a huge bottleneck or something. I just have terrible time getting to any hosts on the West Coast. I go through a server in California, and that server has like crazy latency. So sorry, I don't have the collage URL. I'll try and get that later. Anyway, it's very exciting. The 35th anniversary is coming up. And also on Fridays is the Synth Battle Royale. Definitely check that out. I'll advertise and talk about that more later. But we don't have time for all of that because, oh man, we got to get started with what?
World news.
That's right, the world news. There's a lot going on. We'll start with the death, like we always do. Two Iranian aerospace officials martyred while on a mission. Two Iranian aerospace officials, including a member of the Revolutionary Guards Corps, were martyred while on a mission in separate incidents inside the country, the Fars News Agency reported on Monday. Ali Khamenei, a member of the Guards Aerospace Division, was martyred in the city of Khomeini in Iran's central Markazi province, Fars said. In a separate incident, Mohammed Abduz, 33, an aerospace staff member, died in the northern Semnan province on Sunday while on a mission. And missions in quotes here. No further details were given on the men or the circumstances of their death. 2 weeks ago, Colonel Ali Esmalazadeh, a commander of the Guard's External Operations Unit, the Quds Force, died in an accident in his home, according to state news agency IRNA. This is coming to us from France 24, and there are heavy use of quotes around martyred, mission, accident in his home, implying that they're not necessarily sure that's accurate. On May 22nd, Guards Colonel Sayyad Kodai, 50, was killed outside his home in the east of the Iranian capital after attackers on motorbikes shot him 5 times. The guards accused Zionists of being behind the high-profile assassination and vowed revenge. The New York Times later reported that Israel told the U.S. that the Jewish state was behind the killing of Kodai. The U.S. Daily cited an anonymous intelligence official briefed on communications. Surprise, not really. Iran's state television has said that Kodai was a member of the Quds Force and that he was known in Syria, where Iran has attacked, acknowledged deploying military advisors. The guards described Kodai as a defender of the sanctuary, a term used for those who work on behalf of Tehran in Syria or Iraq. The guards are designated as a terrorist group by the United States. So, that's what's happening there. Some death. We don't know what for, though. Speaking of death, or imminent death, I guess, let's talk about nuclear weapons. China defense minister says nuclear buildup is justified. Oh, shucks. I didn't realize this is a Wall Street Journal article. That's no good. Because that's a giant paywall. That's a big nope. I used to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal, and so sometimes I accidentally go back there and read stuff. Let's see if we can get a free article for us. Let's go to... so many crappy news sources. Let's see if Reuters will let us read. I know they have a paywall too. Alright, we still have a free article here. China has made impressive progress in developing new nuclear weapons, but will only use them for self-defense and never use them first, Chinese Defense Minister Wei Feng told delegates at the Shangri-La Dialogue on Sunday. In response to a question about reports last year on construction of more than 100 new nuclear missile silos in China's east, he said, China has always pursued an appropriate path to developing nuclear capabilities for protection of the country. He added nuclear weapons displayed in a 2019 military parade in Beijing, which included upgraded launchers for China's DF, that's Delta Foxtrot 41, intercontinental ballistic missile, were operational and deployed. China has developed its capabilities for over 5 decades. It's fair to say there has been impressive progress, he said. China's policy is consistent. We use it for self-defense. We will not be the first to use nuclear weapons. He said the ultimate goal of China's nuclear arsenal was to prevent nuclear war. We develop nuclear capabilities to protect the hard work of the Chinese people and protect our people from the scourge of nuclear warfare. The U.S. State Department last year called China's nuclear buildup concerning and said it appeared Beijing was deviating from decades of nuclear strategy based around minimal deterrence. It called on China to engage with it on practical measures to reduce the risks of destabilizing arms races. And then if we just ask our friends at Google, how many nuclear weapons does the U.S. have? We'll probably get a generic thing. Scientific American has done the research for us. Let's see. Alright. In 1967, the United States had 31,225 nuclear weapons. At the time of the Soviet Union's collapse in 1991, around 35,000 nuclear weapons remained at thousands of sites across a vast Eurasian landmass across 11 time zones. Today, Russia says it has 6,257 nuclear warheads, and the United States admits to having 5,550. However, the drastic reduction is mainly due to them dismantling retired warheads. There's actually an increase in deployed warheads in 2021, and all 9 nuclear-armed states are either upgrading or increasing their arsenals. So, the United States is all about reducing nuclear proliferation because we want to still have the most bombs, which is very, it's always funny to me whenever that comes up. Speaking of, let's keep on moving. Let's keep it going. I don't want to lose time getting on a rant. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get that way, and I only, on listening back in the archive, do I realize, oh man, sometimes I get ranty, and I'm sorry about that. So, let's move along. What's happening now? Well, remember how they were demolishing Muslim houses in India just out of Islamophobia and hate? Well, now they're doing it out of vengeance. Act of vendetta. Afreen Fatima on her house being bulldozed in India. A young Muslim activist whose house was bulldozed by authorities in the northern Indian state of Uttar Pradesh says it was an act of vendetta by the government for the protests over comments made against Prophet Muhammad by officials of the country's right-wing governing party. Surrounded by a large posse of police and riot gear, authorities in Uttar Pradesh, Prayagraj City on Sunday brought in earth movers to demolish Afreen Fatima's house as dozens of media people recorded the demolition. Within hours, the two-story building was reduced to rubble and its belongings, furniture, books, and photographs thrown on an empty plot next to the house. Among them was a poster that said, "When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty." The demolition came after days of protest by India's Muslims against the anti-Islam remarks by two members of Prime Minister Narendra Modi's BJP party, or Bharatiya Janata Party, earlier this month, triggering a diplomatic backlash against New Delhi. As several Muslim nations demand an apology from the Indian government, the Muslims in India saw the remarks by the BJP Nupur Sharma and former Delhi media cell head Naveen Kumar Jindal as yet another instance of the right-wing's hate speech against the minority community, which has spiked since Modi came to power in 2014. As global outrage grew, the BJP suspended Sharma and expelled Jindal, saying their comments do not reflect the party's views, and asking its spokespeople to be extremely cautious on religious matters while speaking on news channels. Meanwhile, police in the Indian capital filed cases against the two and others for inciting hatred and other charges. Muslim groups say the moves were not enough and held large protests. The protests in Prayagraj, earlier known as Allahabad, on Friday. Allahabad. On Friday, following the Muslim congregational prayers, turned violent at some places, with police firing tear gas and baton charging as demonstrators marched and allegedly tried to burn a police vehicle. A BJP spokesperson said Uttar Pradesh Chief Minister Yogi Adityanath, a saffron-robed, hard-line Hindu monk, ordered officials to demolish any illegal establishments and homes of people accused of involvement in protests. At least two other houses belonging to Muslims were also demolished in Uttar Pradesh on Sunday. Fatima's family was not home when their 20-year-old house in Prayagraj was torn down. Hours after Friday's protest in the city, police raided the house and took away her 57-year-old father, mother, and teenage sister. At around 8:50 p.m. on Friday, police came saying they want to talk to my father. They asked him to come to the police station. They didn't tell us if it was a detention or arrest. There is no warrant. Javed, who is a politician belonging to a Muslim party, was charged, that's her father, was charged with rioting, and the police soon declared him the mastermind of protests. A tag flashed immediately on TV screens across the country. Praveen and Somaya were detained by police and released on Sunday morning. "My mother and my sister were illegally detained for more than 30 hours," she says. So, the article goes on, and you can read the whole thing at Al Jazeera, but it's also available on the BBC. This is one of the most glaring, obvious tit-for-tat kind of things where the state just kind of exerts this kind of power or control. It's like, used to, they would just kill you, and it would be like, okay, fine. But they found that if they just kill you, that really hurts their position because, you killed them. You're not supposed to kill citizens. But if you destroy everything they own and just completely make it so that they're unable to survive, and then they die that way, I mean, the people forget that you bulldozed their house. We'll probably not talk about this again for maybe ever. But they're going to be homeless for a long time. So anyway, it's just really sad. It's frustrating that that's the move the state chose to go. Here in the U.S., usually people get evicted, and they find ways to evict someone from the house, and then they sell it to someone else, which is more like what they do in Israel, in Pakistan, the areas of the disputed areas of the West Bank and stuff like that, where Israel's throwing up settlements and just stealing houses. All right, well, let's keep moving. This guy.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
All right. Let's talk about two slightly less serious stories. And then We will play a song. So first, let's talk about a man and a horse. The winner of the grueling man versus horse race has revealed he had been awake for 29 hours before the event after flying from Tenerife to claim victory. Trail runner Ricky Lightfoot became only the third person to win the race since it started in 1980. He told the BBC he had woken at 6 a.m. BST on Friday before catching a flight to Manchester at midnight. Landing at 0400, he traveled to Wales, arriving at Llanwrd Wells, Powys, at 0900 for the race start at 11. Crossing the line, the 6'4", 1.93 meters athlete had no idea whether he had won, as the people and animal take slightly different routes. After asking around, he discovered he had come out on top against 1,000 runners and 50 horses with a time of 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 23 seconds. Shucks, if he could have had one more, it would have been all twos. He took home $3,500 after beating the first horse by more than 2 minutes on the 22.5-mile or 36-kilometer course. The 37-year-old Cumbrian said, "Winning was pretty good, like, it's great to win the event and beat a horse," he said. "I called my partner and said, I beat the horse, and she said, you joking?" And I said, "No, I did." She was like, "Oh my God." Firefighter said he had been quietly confident. "I thought I could give the horse a good race," he explained. Since his win, he has been asked if he will enter the Grand National next. "It would be great if I could win the Grand National," he said. "I've never rode a horse in my life. I once rode a donkey." After winning, the father of two then made his way back home to Maryport in Cumbria, as he had to be back at work at 7:30 on Sunday. Race director Mike Thomas said Mr. Lightfoot, a member of Cumbria Running Club, Ellenborough AC, beat the horses quite comfortably on Saturday. "The last time a human beat a horse in the race was in 2007, and the first time was 2004. The race, which returned after 2 years due to the pandemic, began on tarmac, but took in forest tracks and open moorland. The jackpot prize for runner who beats the first horse and rider starts at 500, increases by £500 each year the event takes place until it's won. So, very, very cool. I thought that was kind of neat. Man versus horse. Saudi Arabia banned the Lightyear movie because there's a same-sex kiss, and it follows along in the footsteps of Doctor Strange, West Side Story, and Eternals on a list of Disney titles to be blocked by Gulf censors. That's what's going on there. Let's play a song. This guy...
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
We've been talking for, almost 20 minutes? Jeepers, creepers. We've been doing this lately where we end up playing short songs because the time and stuff, and that's no fun. Anyway, let's go ahead here and play a song. This is a Blaze Foley song. I really like Blaze Foley, and this is called "Loving You." This is from the Lost Muscle Show.
But you don't want me to. I'm trying to forget, but it's not working yet. I wish I could have been what you say you wanted then. But I was a damaged man from a love I had lost. Town to town, I was steady falling down. I did not try to see, I could as well been blind. You say you love me then. Oh, I wish you would again. I won't ask you to pretend, 'cause you never ask me. Mm-hmm. sad. From the hurt I try to hide, I see you everywhere I go. You say you love me then, oh, I wish you could again. I can't ask you to pretend, 'cause you never ask me. Loving you, but you don't want me to. I'm trying to forget, but it's not working yet.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF. And SDF is powered by you. So thanks so much for being here and listening and hanging out. And like we said, tune in starting at, 1400 hours on the 15th to hear the 35 anniversary special. Very exciting times, I think. I don't know about you guys, but I'm excited about it. And every damn day at 1930 UTC is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tope. Had a great fun this weekend. It was a lot of fun. We chat and calm during these shows, and that's how we communicate a lot of times around Anon Radio stuff. There's the mailing list, and there's calm. There's also B-Board, but usually most people that you want to, a lot of people are either in calm, or a few people are in IRC. I learned Snowdesk is a lurker in IRC yesterday, which I thought was cool. But anyway, let's keep it moving. Check it out. Oh, yeah, and stick around for Harry Larry at 20 hours. At 20 hours. I don't know how to say that best. It's awkward to say. But 20 at 20 hours is Harry Larry in the Mixed Remix on Mondays, so it's a lot of fun. All right, COVID. Dozens of COVID cases linked to a Beijing bar. A total of 166 COVID infections in China have been linked to a single bar in Beijing. A government spokesman described the outbreak as ferocious. All residents living in the area where the bar is located will be tested over the next 3 days. The number of infections in the city is low by international standards, but high for China, which is the world's only major economy still maintaining a zero COVID policy. The outbreak was traced to a venue called the Heaven Supermarket Bar in the well-known entertainment area of Sanlitun in Chaoyang District. Two buildings housing hundreds of people in Chaoyang were put under strict lockdown on Sunday after a positive case was reported. Some people in Beijing say they were sent texts telling them to report to authorities if they had recently visited Sanlitun's bars. Chinese officials have reversed the relaxation of some COVID rules in Beijing because of the outbreak. Most children in the capital will not return to school next week as originally planned. The capital has reported 1,997 local COVID cases since April 22nd, 2022. Mentioned in the Austin area, the CDC and the city have stopped reporting like granular numbers, and instead we have a blunt, like kind of a blunt, low, medium, high kind of thing. And we moved up to medium, which means that it's suggested if you're not fully vaccinated to wear masks, but if you are vaccinated, you don't have to. So take that how you will. I think I'm going to buy some. I've used up or otherwise consumed all my disposable masks, so I need to go buy some more because it doesn't look like it's over just yet. Like, what's that song? It's like, you ain't seen nothing yet. Bah, bah. You know, you ain't seen nothing yet. I think that's what's happening. So anyway, COVID outbreak in China and Beijing. We're running out of time. Oh, no. Here, let me tell you about a couple of cool stories that I thought were really neat, or at least were interesting. Two hurricane research satellites were lost in an Astra launch failure. This isn't new for Astra. Two small NASA hurricane research satellites were destroyed after launch from Cape Canaveral Sunday when their commercial rocket provided by Astra prematurely shut down its upper stage engine before reaching the mission's target orbit. That's right. It stopped before it got where it was going. The twin nanosatellites, each about the size of a shoebox, were the vanguard of a planned fleet of six cyclone monitoring spacecraft to measure temperature, moisture, and other parameters inside hurricanes and tropical storms. The TROPICS mission is designed to collect data on cyclones with higher frequency than possible with other satellites. The goal is to make measurements over hurricanes in repeating passes as often as every 50 minutes from up to four times per day with conventional up from four times per day with conventional weather satellites. I've tried to track those weather satellites. They don't fly by all that often, four times a day. The loss of the first two TROPIC satellites isn't a death knell for the mission. NASA officials said before Sunday's launch that only four of the six satellites, two of the three launches from Astra, need to work to meet the mission's success criteria. Although today's launch with Astra didn't go as planned, the mission offered a great opportunity for new science and launch capabilities, tweeted Thomas Zurbuchen, head of NASA's Science Mission Directorate. Earth Venture missions like this one are low-cost opportunities to send NASA science to space. It also enables more opportunities for researchers to have access to space. The flight began with liftoff from Space Launch Complex 46 on Cape Canaveral, Space Force, I hate that that's still a thing, at 1:43 p.m. Eastern Time, 17:43 GMT. Following a delay of an hour and a half to clear a boat from the downrange hazard area and allow Astra time to ensure the proper conditioning of liquid oxygen propellant to the rocket. The small-scale launcher, standing just 43 feet, or 13 meters tall, quickly climbed away from Pad 46, powered by five kerosene-fueled Delphin engines. Astra's launch vehicle, called Rocket 3.3, is the smallest orbital-class satellite launcher currently in operation, staying less than one-fifth the height of SpaceX's much larger Falcon 9 rocket. The first stage steered the rocket east from the Cape Canaveral spaceport, then shut down its engines when on time. A payload shroud jettisoned to reveal the upper stage and two NASA research satellites, followed by stage separation and ignition of the upper stage engine. The second stage's ether engine, also burning kerosene, was supposed to fire more than 5 minutes to propel the two NASA TROPICS hurricane research satellites into orbit. The rocket targeted an altitude of 357 miles, or 550 kilometers, but live video showed the engine shut off at about 7 minutes 21 seconds, more than a minute before the scheduled shutoff time. Telemetry displayed on live video stream indicated the rocket was flying around 330 miles, or 532 kilometers, and a velocity of 14,707 or miles, or 6575 meters per second, when it turned off. So, shucks. It didn't reach a stable orbit, and that kind of is a bummer. Oh, no! Here's a quick one. A Google engineer put on leave after saying AI chatbot has become sentient. I read a few articles about this. I think that the person who is saying this is maybe just trying to... I'm not sure. I'm not convinced. I think this is more like a Turing test that went a little too well. Oil prices are dropping on fears of China's COVID flare-up, and Rwanda's ready to receive the first batch of migrants from the UK. They're going to be getting stuff. They should be arriving soon, so I hope that they have a good life in Rwanda and are able to make a go of it. Oh, and we reached a gun control bill.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Seven.